So in the performance of our devotional service, then we should see that that aspect of devotion, that is the prominent feature. Things in our consciousness. Time-wise, if that can be there, that's ideal, of course. But much of the time in day-to-day life, all the things that we have to do to take care so that things go smoothly, that takes a lot of time. So, but we should not get distracted forgetting that Krishna consciousness is actually the main feature, the main point. Because we work hard, we take care of things, for what? Right? It doesn't make sense that we maintain things so that we can go out and make money so we can maintain things. Right? That doesn't make sense. Right? So in other words, we're maintaining things so that we can be God conscious. Right? So that we can interact with the devotees, we can perform our various, you know, how to say, spend time in association. That's what it's for, right? Because to be able to move around, function, you have to have a place to stay, you have to have something to eat, right? You need clothes, you need medicine, so all that costs money, therefore there's a job. That job takes care of that life. And that lifestyle you have, now we deal with what we have now. Yes, that's good. But we have to always remember is that that lifestyle itself, at some point, will come to an end. And then the soul will transfer to another body. So then to put so much effort into something that's temporary and going to go away anyway, that is not so important. It means to take care so we can actually deal with the eternal aspect, which is ourselves, the soul. That's the main focus. So we always have to see is that that aspect is there. So there must be time for developing Krishna consciousness, trying to advance. So we're Krishna conscious, but we have to be cultivating. We have to be trying to develop it. So that means we're hearing, we're chanting, we're studying, we're associating with devotees, taking prasad, trying to do some service. All these different things we're trying to do. And then by doing that, then we advance in Krishna consciousness. Then there's a meaning to the family engagement, and then there's a meaning to the occupation. But otherwise, if we don't engage in some kind of advancement in Krishna consciousness, then what's the point in just our daily life? And what's the point of the daily life? I mean, if we don't have a daily life, what's the point of the occupation? Right? Modern concept is the more knowledge you have, the more skills you have, therefore the better situated you are in the economic community, then your prestige and everything is higher. That's nice, but how many people ever notice that prestige? How often is it brought out? Does that make sense? Somebody's very wealthy, somebody's well situated. Once a year, Forbes says that they're this rich. They're number 392. And then the rest of the year, nobody knows and nobody cares. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that we work so hard for all these social things and what'll be here and there. But much of the time, if we notice, the social thing is amongst our friends, not about outside. Outside generally doesn't notice us. It's sad, but it's a fact. You walk down the street, nobody knows who you are. No one's inquiring, right? No one's taking any pictures. You're not ending up on some magazine or some newspaper. Nobody cares. You don't even end up on, you know, even your family members, you don't even end up on anything. Does that make sense? So the whole point is since nobody cares, why worry so much about what they care, since they don't? Yeah. You know, that's the whole point. So Therefore, then one should do what is important in life, what's necessary in life. Interacting with those who are important, but even more important is interacting to develop that transcendental platform. Because without that transcendental platform, then we're going to see that there is a weakness. Because just body, yes, does that make sense? Is because of the temporary nature of it. So, therefore one should try to mold one's life to see that the practice of Krishna consciousness is actually the prominent element in one's life. And by prominent, as he said, by consciousness. Because by time, so many things take time. Sleeping at night takes time. Working takes time. Right? Maintaining the house and all these different things, it takes time. Right? But that doesn't mean it's the prominent aspect. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of where you put your consciousness. One can say, no, no, but all these things are there. We can't do otherwise. You can so easily do otherwise. Right? Something's coming up, some big special event or something, you think about that. You don't think about the work, you don't think about other things. You know, kids when they go to school, there's something happening, they don't even notice school. They're there all day, they do their work. But then they're thinking about after school, then this is going to be happening. Does that make sense? That's the consciousness. So that's what we can adjust to see that we're Krishna conscious, despite how much time everything else takes. So it's not the quantity that's important, it's the quality. So the quality of Krishna consciousness, that's the important aspect. If that quality is there, then even though other things take up quantity, it won't be a distraction. It's not a disturbance. But we have to actually be aware of it. It's not just going to happen on its own. Right? Nothing just happens on its own. The dishes just get washed just on their own. We don't think about it. We make no endeavor. We sit in the living room, right? And, you know, we may have a scientific theory that, you know, by the volume of buttons that we push on the remote and change channels, that somehow or another the dishes will get washed. But there's a good chance that after spending many hours pushing the buttons on the remote and you go into the kitchen, the dishes will still be dirty. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that you have to make the endeavor yourself. You actually consciously have to make the endeavor. But by making that endeavor, since the Lord's within the heart, He being pleased, then these results come nicely. We advance nicely. Because the whole point is that since He's controlling everything, then by acting in such a way that He's pleased, then we advance in God consciousness. Because that's the difficult thing to understand. Actually, understanding the material things is not so difficult. We have the ability, we have the capacity, then whatever it is that we want to learn, whatever it is that we want to do, that to that degree it can be done. But that's limited by your conditioning. What kind of mind, what kind of intelligence, what kind of body and senses you have. Depending what that is, that's what you can do. And beyond that, you won't be able to do. Right? Birds can fly, fish can swim. So it depends upon what is that nature. But the soul is nature. Is to be God conscious. That's the natural position of the soul. So the soul, having that position to take up God consciousness, that then anybody in any situation can be God conscious. Right? That God consciousness is not dependent upon the material surroundings. Right? Some of the times we think that the material surroundings, that's the most important. Oh, when we get all this arranged, then we can be God conscious. Or when that's arranged, then we can be God conscious. But actually, God consciousness is independent of that. It doesn't matter for that. Right? It's not affected by that. We can allow it to affect us because we get distracted, but technically it doesn't because it's consciousness. And consciousness doesn't take up any time or space. Right? It's inherent with the soul. So at any time, any place, any circumstance, we can be God conscious. But we have to be conscious that we have to be God conscious. Right? That's important. Right? Because whatever you desire, that's what, if you contemplate it, then you'll endeavor to gain that. But if you don't contemplate it, you don't make the endeavor. Does that make sense? Whatever results you gain is because you made an endeavor. Whatever endeavor is there is because you see the importance of the results. And how did that importance of the results come? By contemplating. Right? By contemplation of the desire, all the aspects of that, then you see what are the benefits, what is involved with it. Being convinced of that it's something good, then we make the endeavor. By making the endeavor, we get the results. So if we want results in Krishna consciousness, that means we have to endeavor in Krishna consciousness. To endeavor in Krishna consciousness means then we have to appreciate the benefit of it, the importance of it. And how is that going to be appreciated? By learning about it, hearing about it, contemplating. And how is that gained? By association. So by associating, by being in the association of others who are interested in God consciousness, that's how then we will develop that. But otherwise, if we don't make that endeavor, then things won't come out. Things won't progress. So we always have to try to make that endeavor. Right? So by associating with devotees, hearing, chanting, remembering, taking prasad, worshipping the deities, offering prayers, whatever form, but we have to see that we're making that endeavor. Otherwise, if we don't, then we'll just have our day-to-day life, and before you know it, day-to-day life has already moved on to the next life, and you start all over again. But you work so hard this life, you get so much education, so much position in society, so many facilities, and then you move on to the next body where you can't even walk, right? Someone has to feed you. And then you start all over again. Growing up, going to school, drawing that travis, making that thing, and then by the time you do make it in the world, then, you know, it's about time to retire. Right? And then starting over again. So if we look at that, that's what happens life after life after life. So on the scale of eternity, it's not so important. We just take our daily life as that's the all in all. Of course, it looks quite important, just like the, you know, for anybody, they feel their life is very important. But in actuality, as we said, it's important to us, but it's not really important to anybody else. So all this false prestige, all these other things don't really have an effect. Right? They don't really do it for us. Maybe for others, but not for us. Any questions on this? Yes.
So, how to engage psychophysiological structure?
The psychophysical structure.
Yes.
In Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Means the physical is, the physical does what the subtle, the gross body does what the subtle body does. Right? Means whatever the mind, intelligence, ego, whatever they're contemplating, that's what you do with the body. Right? So therefore, the mind is thinking about Krishna consciousness, then the body will naturally be engaged. Right? Just like if the mind thinks, I'm hungry, then the body starts walking towards the refrigerator. Right? But if the mind doesn't think I'm hungry, the body just sits on the couch. Right? So now how will the mind be thinking about Krishna consciousness? That will happen because of intelligence. When the intelligence is contemplating the advantages and disadvantages of you know, just the world around us, then we can start to identify what is more important, what is less. And then what is going to affect that understanding is going to be our identity. So if we identify as the soul, as the servant of Krishna, then we'll use the intelligence to see ways to engage in that, and then the mind will contemplate those things. So that's the most important element, is that if we identify as servant of Krishna, then we'll engage in devotion service. But if we don't identify, whatever we identify as, that's going to be the things that the intelligence will contemplate and the mind will choose, therefore we'll be engaged in things that are not God conscious. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the main thing. Adjust the identity or our ego, that then naturally makes everything else fall.
So it comes from intelligence is important.
Yes, from the intelligence we see that it's important to think like this, then we try to apply it. And when we apply it, that's when we start to get the result. But that, and that intelligence comes from associating with others who have that intelligence.
So is there different ways, because you mentioned that there are different psychophysiological bodies, different intelligence, different senses.
The basic principle is the same for anyone. It's just a matter of what activities they might do. That'll make the difference. But that one identifies as the servant of the Lord, one therefore engages in activities connected with the Lord, that anyone, whatever their psychophysical nature is, they can all do. It's only the difference of what they do with that nature.
And it culminates in God consciousness.
Yes. Yes. Okay? Yeah, very good. Yes.
What is the spiritual endeavor? What brings spiritual result? Is that
identification? What is spiritual endeavor and what is spiritual result? Is that what you mean?
What is the endeavor? Yes. Spiritual.
What is the endeavor?
Spiritual endeavor.
That spiritual endeavor means that we try to do things in connection with Krishna consciousness. What? Which word didn't you catch?
It's remembering or identifying.
Any of it means that you're identifying with, that's why you're engaged. See, is by the psychological nature is, depending upon the environment, there's certain impressions you have with what can be done with that environment. So therefore the intelligence will contemplate what and how to do things in that environment, what would be the benefit. But depending upon how you identify yourself, is then what options within that you will choose. So if you don't identify that I am servant of Krishna, then how will you choose doing service to Krishna in any particular environment? You know what I'm saying? Because it's not, you can say, no, but this is all you can do in this environment. But if you look around you, there's so many people in that same environment, they're all doing different things. No one's doing the same thing in the same environment you're in. Right? Let's say you go down to Esplanade, right? Yeah, that means something to you. It doesn't mean something. You're not from here.
No.
I see.
From Estonia.
Estonia. Okay, well, they start with the same letter. Okay? But it means the main street in the town, you know, where all the parks and shops and everything like that. So you must have something like that, right? So now, if you go down there, you're there, and you can say, well, I'm here at this place. I have to do this. You know, I have to go to this shop. Right? But if you look around, amazingly enough, there's hundreds and hundreds of people, and they're not all going to that shop. Some are going to the shop next door, some are just walking, you know, some are stopping, some are talking, some are taking pictures, like that. Some are sitting at the cafes, some are sitting in the park, some are playing music, some are trying to figure out where their car is. You know what I'm saying? So we're saying that, no, I'm forced by this environment. No one's forced by it. We choose in that environment what we do. So therefore, you can choose whether you want to see that environment from a God-conscious perspective or not. Just like you can choose what you're going to do in that environment. Right? So, since you can choose what you're doing in that environment, you can also choose how you perceive the environment. So depending upon how you perceive it is then what's going to make up your choices on what you do. Does that make sense? Yeah? Something else?
Yes. Krishna Maharaj. How to distinguish between consciousness and intelligence and mind and ego?
Consciousness and intelligence and mind and ego. You're pairing those, or you were just meaning those four?
Not necessarily. I mean, how to behave properly with all this is basically the question.
The four aspects, they're all connected, but they're four different aspects. You know, it's like how do you distinguish between your arms and legs? You know, but they all work together, right? You know. So, the mind is what chooses what you do or not do. It accepts and rejects. That's its function. It doesn't have another function like that. So that means that when the senses bring in information, then the mind, through the impressions, reduces it down to a particular important point. Right? Because so many impressions are coming, you can't deal with everything at once. Does that make sense? So, then, that's what the mind will do, right? It chooses what you're going to think about. But that's going to be based on previous impressions. Then the intelligence will analyze the situation, come up with options to be done in that situation. Then the mind will choose from those options that are based on the ego. Right? What's your identity? Does that make sense? You know, it's not like the old ladies walking by the skateboard place where all the teenagers are on her walker and all that. She sees the boys doing the skateboarding and all that. And she thinks, wow, wouldn't it be cool to do a headstand while going over the jump and then going down the railing, you know, like that? Right? And so she can think that, but is she going to do that? No, because what's the identity? She's an old lady with a walker. And if she does do that, then that will be impressive. But she identifies differently, she's not going to do that. Right? She'll remember when she was a kid and they used to, you know, do things. Does that make sense? So, then the mind will choose from those options based on the ego that the intelligence has come up with. Then one will act. That will create new impressions. That will then affect your future decisions in any scenario. Right? Now, what are you going to do with these situations? Then that's going to be based on your consciousness. What's your purpose? If the consciousness is God-conscious, then you'll follow that process in connection with what you can do in God-consciousness. Right? If you're interested in money, you'll look at it, how to gain money from this. If you're looking for sense gratification, you'll look at this, how to gain sense gratification. In other words, the mind's going to function based on your consciousness. Higher consciousness, then the choices the mind makes are higher. Lower consciousness, lower choices. Right? And the intelligence and the ego, they just play their part. They just go along. Does that make sense? So, through the consciousness, then, and the intelligence, that then you can have influence on the mind and the ego. Right? Does that make sense? So we're trying to get the mind to agree to change the ego. But that's going to start with our change of consciousness. Right? So, intelligence is the mechanical key, but the actual point is association with devotees. By that association, then we hear, we see, we engage, and then that purifies the heart, that brings us to those higher positions. Does that make sense?
May I ask one more question? Right. What is the weakest link?
what is the weakest link? Our desire. We have to remember mind, intelligence, false ego are dead matter. So it's us, the soul, that actually makes the decision. So our desire, whether we want to become God conscious or we want to remain materially conditioned, it's up to us. So the weakest link is us. So that's why if we spend time in good association, then we get more strength. Does that make sense? Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Something further?
The same question.
The same question.
Yeah, I mean, like, why the ego wins in every situation, most of the situations?
Why not?
I mean, it tries to win the situation every time.
But that's because that's how. Because let's say you're in a situation and you're going to act in that situation, right? How do you know what you do in that situation? Like, let's say we go into the room where the coffee machine is. Okay, so that means some document is going to be put into the copy machine. And then you're going to print out copies of that document, right? How do you know what you do in this whole operation? How do you identify that? Are you the copy machine? No, the outcome is there that you'll have that. No, here. Use your brain, don't just say business little phrases that they want you to say and you sound good to the middle management. Okay? Actually use your intelligence here. When you go into the copy room, who is that you? Are you the copy machine? Are you the paper? Are you the document? Which one are you? Maybe you're the floor. Maybe you're the light bulb. Maybe you're the switch that turns on the light bulb. Maybe you're the plug. How do you identify what you are? Through intelligence, but that means then you have to identify that I am the person that's going to, you know, operate the copy machine. So that's the identity. Without an identity, you can't function. Right? Let's say that you have confidence. What does that mean? You have an identity. And when you don't have confidence, means you don't have an identity. Right? I mean, other than, okay, I'm an idiot or something. You know? Does that make sense? But, you know, everybody knows idiots don't do stuff, so that means I can't do anything. So the point is, so when you have confidence, means I can take part in the process of whatever I'm involved in. But you have to know who you are to fit into that. Just like there's a car, okay? Cars take part in the driving process, right? So according to your identity, what's your relationship to the car? Like, can you stand outside and take part in the car going down the road? No. Okay. Not unless there's a rope tied to the bumper and then one around your wrists and all that, and it's a, you know, some kind of a movie or something. Yeah. And we're out in the Nevada desert, right? So then it'll work, right? But other than that, then you're not going to be taking part, right? So that means you have to be inside the car, okay? But what's the identity of you inside the car? If you're driving, then where do you sit? You sit in the back seat, put your feet up, get out your cigar, open the window. Huh? No, but the mothers-in-law sit back there and drive the car. Right? Right, why? Because you're the driver. Right? And then they tell you, well, go here, go there, you idiot, you missed this and that. What do you call this driving in this scenario? Yeah. So the whole point is that by identity, you then therefore sit in the driver's seat. Right? Now what if someone else is driving? Right? Then where do you sit? Yeah, it depends. If you're like their friend or someone else, you sit in the passenger seat. What if you're the boss seat?
Then that becomes like an ego.
No, but all of it's ego. Mm-hmm. Ego means identity. You understand? So depending upon your identity is how you relate and how you position yourself. Does that make sense? So that's where the ego comes in. Without that, then you can't choose where you take part in the process. Does that make sense? Something else? Yes.
Thank you for a nice lecture. I was thinking about, let's say, like, there's a phrase nowadays, especially like free your mind.
So free your mind.
Yeah.
Okay. means people are charging for their mind, so you should free it, or it's locked up somewhere, and so you should let it out, or?
I think it's more like, you know, you should be open to research some new stuff, but I'm thinking about this free of mind that I've been trying to free my mind in that sense that you know my mind is not wandering into the places it shouldn't go. But I find it much more easier for myself since that I try to engage instead of freeing my mind from desires. I try more like look that I try to engage as much as possible. At least I think this way, to engage myself in the Krishna consciousness, so that then I can, it's more easy to give up desires, because otherwise it's very difficult.
Well, it's not that you're getting, see, the concept that you're going to give up desires is not possible. The point is that when we say give up desire, that means give up material desires. Because the mind, all it does is accept and reject. So it has to be accepting and rejecting something. So then it's just a matter of what that's going to be. Is it going to be something material? Or is it going to be something spiritual? Right? So if it's spiritual, then where's the space for material? Right? You know, if you're driving somewhere and your car's full, you can't take any more passengers. Right? Unless it's a Mini Cooper, and you're setting a new Guinness Book World Book or, you know, records, you know, thing, and you're already, you know, you only have 17 in the car, and, you know, of course there's room for one more, right? You know, it's like that. So then you're going to, if you're always engaged in Krishna consciousness, then there's no room for Maya. So the point is this, whereas there's Krishna, he's like the sun. There can't be Maya, who's like darkness. Like where the sun is, it's light, so there's no darkness. So where there's Krishna consciousness, then there won't be any consciousness of Maya. So that's how the senses are controlled. So when they say free the mind, then, you know, just let it wander off and then your mind disappear. You know, it's just like just by your thinking process, then you end up with a lobotomy or something, and your mind has been freed, you know. Why are you looking like that? Because I freed my mind. But, you know, it's like that. I don't know. I wandered off that way. I haven't seen it for 3 days. You know what I'm saying? So these things are said to get across a feeling or an idea, but that's the only problem is they're just feelings. And after a while, they don't mean anything anymore. You know what I'm saying? It becomes that they'll become unused, they'll become archaic, because by saying it, it doesn't mean the same thing, or it'll change its meaning. You know? Does that make sense? So, that's, yes. So, in freeing the mind means we free it from absorption in just mundane things, and engage it in elevating topics connected with Krishna consciousness. That will then actually free the mind. So we're also into freeing the mind, and we've been talking about that, you know, forever. So, you know, these concepts, these are new. People are just trying to get into that. Does that make sense? Plus, most likely, it'll be more kind of intellectual, artsy kind of thing. They'll say those things. You know, probably managers don't say free your mind, you know, like that. Something else? Yes?
How to get desire to drink alcohol away.
Get desire to?
Drink alcohol.
Drink.
How to get desire to drink alcohol to go away?
Yeah.
Okay. So, point is alcohol will give a seeming effect or perception change, right? But the actual point is it just the change in the perception, or is it the experience from that change that's important? Does that make sense?
I'm trying to understand.
Trying to understand, okay. Someone drinks alcohol, the idea is that the problems will go away.
Okay.
But if in the experience from that is not good, will they consider continuing that?
I don't know.
Meaning, people do things because of the experience they'll gain from it, not from the thing itself. Right? Does that make sense? Somebody gets a fancy car because of the experience they'll get from the fancy car. The fancy cars, you know, tin and rubber and, you know, other plastic and other things like that. But it's the particular experience that they gain from it's why they get it. Right? Does that make sense? So people will drink alcohol because of the experience they'll get. Right? So it's not the alcohol, it's the experience. Does that make sense? Okay. So the point is since everything's dead matter, all that things have to be, it becomes dynamic or seems like it's happening because of Krishna entering into these things. So it's Krishna's potency that gives the experience. The mistake is that the person thinks the alcohol is giving the experience, but it's Krishna's giving the experience. So since it's Krishna giving the experience, means you can get that experience by just directly interacting with Krishna, you don't need the alcohol.
The same experience.
Yeah, means by chanting Hare Krishna, by doing anything, by seeing Krishna's involvement in something, then that's the experience we're looking for. We're looking for Krishna. We think it's the alcohol. Someone else thinks it's, you know, jumping off the...
So everyone is looking for Krishna.
Everyone's looking for Krishna. They're just trying in different ways, that's all. So as soon as we understand it's Krishna we're looking for, then we don't have to go through so much material difficulties to get that. We can deal directly with that by chanting, by reading, by associating with devotees. So then there's no need of all these other things, unless it's, you know, something like eating lunch or something. You know what I'm saying? But these other distractions, they're not important. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Maharaj,
you have the same question.
thank you very much. You mentioned about association and how it's very important. Can you elaborate more of how we can choose proper association?
How we can choose proper associations. Rupa Goswami mentions like-minded and more advanced. So it means any devotee that we associate with, but in being close in that, then it's those who are like-minded, which means that like-minded would mean that the same kinds of things or same ways of thinking about things are similar, so therefore you can associate. Otherwise, if you use the words in one way and someone else uses it totally differently, and what you consider a good experience they think is a bad and this and that, hard to actually share experiences in Krishna consciousness. So you do that sharing with those who you find are similar. So that there means you can discuss things and both parties will understand what you're talking about. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm.
So like that, that's how you choose. Similar and more advanced.
Hare
Krishna. Okay? More advanced means more thinking of Krishna. That's something?
Thank you. Also, usually when we engage in our
field of activities of our daily life and our occupational activities, then they absorb our consciousness quite a lot, and we become totally dragged into a world full of material things. How to keep their nose above water and stay Krishna conscious in that situation?
Means to keep your only your nose. If you have a big nose, then that could work. Is that how you say it here? Is keep your nose above water? In English, we say keep your head above water. A little bit of your higher ideals. Okay. The whole point is to understand is that there isn't any water. You understand? Because we think that all these things are something separate, but why does money work? You have a flat piece of paper with some faces on it. Why does that buy things? It has to be empowered. So the concept of money, is that created by the government? No, they simply decide what form of monetary instrument they're going to use. But the concept of money, that's not coming from us, that's coming from the Supreme. That you can work and get money equivalent to what work you've done, that also is coming from the law. Right? That somebody's going to be organizing that work, because they know how to economically work with the facility to create profit, and we assist that, or we're doing that ourselves. But the point is the concept of economic development also doesn't come from us. It comes from the Supreme. Right? Does that make sense? And then we're going to go do a particular work that takes skills. Where does the ability to do skills come from? Where does intelligence come from? It's not that you go down to the, in the paper there's some offerings for different jobs. So you and your zombie form go down to the office there, and then, they say the papers are all this, and they decide to accept you, and then they give you some intelligence so that you can then do the job and all that. And as long as you work at the job, you keep the intelligence, and then when either they fire you or you quit, then they take the intelligence back, and then you go home as a zombie again. Right? So do they give intelligence? The mind, the senses? Nothing. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that all these things and the things we work with, the potency of it, why does that work? Why does the chair keep you off the ground? Right? All these things, everything, it's all Krishna's potency. So if one is actually God conscious, one can see Krishna in everything you're doing. You're going to work in a vehicle. How does the vehicle function? We can say, well, you're on this and that turns this, and all that kind of jazz. But in reality, it's Krishna's potency that makes it work. Where does the principle come that from every action you get an equal reaction? It didn't come from Newton. He may have observed it, but it means it was already there. But, that's why an apple fell on his head, only that much reaction it meant there. If an elephant had fallen on his head, there would be no Newton's third law. Right? Like that. Pancakes don't make theories. Right. Yeah. So the basic principle is that everything we're dealing with, the potency of it is Krishna, and the bigger concepts of it, as you put them together into things, each little thing is functioning by Krishna's potency, and as you put them together into a car, or a business, or a street, or a concept, it's still all Krishna. So therefore, you keep your head above water because there is no water. It's only Krishna.
It's easier to remember in this environment.
Yeah.
Emotional environment.
Okay. Let's say you had a job that required a degree. Okay? Is that pretty straightforward? Where did you get the degree from? A school. Is there any connection between that school and that job? It means that company is running the school and therefore making the textbooks, doing all... No, the school is doing school stuff and the business is doing business stuff. So then according to the position you took, how could you ever apply all this knowledge you learned in school in the workplace, because it's a different place? It's because you use your intelligence and you try to apply it. And that's how then you can use it. Does that make sense? So you learn Krishna consciousness and then you try to apply it. And as, the more you apply it, the more you learn. You know, just like anything. Does that make sense? But you have to contemplate, you have to use your intelligence. Using your intelligence, you try to apply it, and then from that application, you see how to better apply it again, and this way it just gets, it develops. Right? That will bring you to the point of realization. That means your values, and so then once it comes to the point of values, then it makes it easier. If you value something, it's much easier to do. Does that make sense? Yeah, but it's not something that's, that can't be done. Yeah. Okay, last question. Yes.
Why the material desires come naturally than the spiritual desire? Like when a child is born, he becomes immediately aware of hunger and thirst. Why the need for the Krishna consciousness does not come very naturally?
It does by association.
Yeah, that needs association, but like you need food as soon as you're born, right?
But what's the problem with that?
Yeah, so
because when people get older, they forget about eating and sleeping, and that's the problem.
Eventually, your association is your desire. Like if you're associated with the Krishna, you desire the Krishna. You become associated with something else, then you desire something else, right?
Right.
So,
no, but I'm still, I don't get what's the problem.
That's why you said that you need the spiritual desire, but like the material desire comes very naturally. Like if you're associated with the materialistic world, you get your material desires overcome the spiritual desire, right?
But it's a matter of what you want. Like you're sitting here in Finland, like that. You were born here? Then how did you get here? You were sitting somewhere in India and you were just overwhelmed with this desire. I have to freeze my butt off in Finland. And you worked hard, got yourself a ticket, flew over here, and went, yes, now this is cold enough. My butt's cold.
But,
so the thing is you have a desire, you cultivate it, you make an endeavor for it, and now you're here.
Okay,
so the point is it's not that it just happened.
So everyone need not be the Krishna conscious, right? So whatever they want to be, they can be.
Whatever they want to be, they can be. That's why you see so many people in the material world, because they don't want to be Krishna conscious, that's why they're here. But if you want to elevate yourself and solve the real problems of life, means birth, death, old age, and disease, because these, no matter how cold your backside is, they're still going to be there. So that then you have to take up Krishna consciousness. Because then on the platform of the soul is eternal. The soul can then transfer themselves to the spiritual platform. That's eternal. That doesn't have any problem. Well, here, it's cold, you get paid, and then you die. You know, so in the spiritual world it works out a little better. Okay. Yes, but that's what association is for. So, using your intelligence, you've come down here, and associating with the people here, then you hear about God consciousness, and then you start to contemplate there's some importance here. And so then you'll start to add it to your life. right? So like that, you use your intelligence and you get the benefit. That makes sense? And Krishna is very clever. You sat in India, ignore Krishna, you fly all the way over here, you become materially prosperous, and you bump into Krishna. So we have to remember, we have to be intelligent, but Krishna is more intelligent. Okay. Right here. Jaya. 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 Jaya.